In this episode, I gather together a group of fans of the band Five to discuss their album Invincible. Then I talk to David Snape in a brand new feature, The Empty Compartment. That's all to come on the 90s and Noughties UK podcast, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. This is Jamie Dyer saying welcome to the show, and if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. You can tweet us at 90snoughtiesuk on Twitter, or you can go to the Facebook page, 90s and Noughties UK. Are we on? Good. Hello and welcome to this edition of the 90s and Noughties UK podcast. And I just thought that before we get on with the main content in this podcast, I'd like to say a massive thank you to those who have been extremely supportive over social media, not just in this country, but around the world. I'm just blown away by your positivity, your messages, your comments, and your feedback on the show. It is so great to see that this little podcast is gathering such momentum, and that people are so enthusiastic about discussing this particular period in UK pop culture. So thank you again. And if you're thinking here right now, Jamie, you must be filling. You can't have that much. Are you kidding me? No, there is so much content to come on future editions of the podcast because I have been recording ahead of time. I've been doing so for the last few months, and there is so much coming your way. We have roundtables about various subjects with people all over the world. I've got reviews coming, interviews, and a brand new feature which you'll be hearing for the first time today on this episode called The Empty Compartment. Now, it was born out of that Steps roundtable that we did where about three quarters of the way through, McDonald's kiddie parties, as it was termed, was mentioned, and they went off on this kind of tangent that went from McDonald's kiddie parties, as it was termed, to the tweenies, and then back to Steps again. And I thought this was such a wondrous moment in that roundtable that really it had nothing to do with Steps at all. It was more to do with just memories of that particular time. And I thought, I wonder if you can bottle this and put this in a segment. And so have one guest with you talking about certain areas of this. And that is where The Empty Compartment has come from. And this week, I am joined by my good friend, David Snape, radio presenter extraordinaire and postman as well, to discuss a range of questions, including Blur versus Oasis and break time snacks. You can hear that later on the podcast. But if you're thinking, well, what about video? Have you tried video? Yes, I have. And you can subscribe to the 90s and Noughties UK podcast on YouTube, where I will be posting up video versions of questions on The Empty Compartment. So do stay tuned for that. Do subscribe on there and let me know as well for future guests who you would like to see discuss either on in interviews, roundtables, or as part of this brand new feature. So yeah, that's The Empty Compartment coming later here on the podcast. But first, this. After the success of the previous roundtable, I went looking round, and I've been a fan of Five for a long time, and I thought, this seems like a great place to come after the success of the Steps one. And in this One, I gathered together a group of fans to discuss the band's Invincible album, which for me was the first Five album that I received. But before we get to that, I want to introduce yet another feature, and I'm going to call it Postbag at this point because it's kind of a throwback to the old days when you used to see on TV shows and in magazines, you can write to us, and it was usually called like mail or postbag or viewers' letters or something. And, you know, when people used to do drawings and stick them on the back of the broom cupboard. And I thought, why don't we connect it to this roundtable? So I went on to social media and I asked my general audience and a group of fans in the Five group what their first memory of Five was, plus their favourite song by the band. And I was inundated with answers, and I'm going to read a few of them here. So if you don't hear yours here, then I apologize. Please do keep submitting for the future. Also, I will say right this moment, some of these people have names of which I was unsure how to pronounce. So if I've pronounced them wrong, then please do tell me. It's all about that positivity. Just let me know if I pronounced it wrong, and I'll correct it. So here are just a few of the answers that I have received. Ruth said, I received Slam Dunk Defunk CD for my birthday. Played it once and ran around the house, chucking my brother off the computer to let me watch the CD-ROM interview that was on the CD. Then listened over and over until I knew the lyrics, then cycled to my friend's house to make them listen. Those Five vibes well and truly grabbed me. It also began an obsession of wanting to be in the band. Battlestar is my favourite song, especially live. Daniel says, my first memory was hearing Five back in 1998 with their single Got the Feeling in my dad's brand new Volvo. He turned up the volume and we had our own Five party down the highway on the way to a city in Sweden. Megan says, I remember watching them perform on Total Request Live and their US version of When the Lights Go Out being on the top 10. Joycey says, I remember when I saw them at MTV playing Slam Dunk Defunk, I got a crush on Jay and Abs. Lucy says, well, I remember the famous Sanremo Festival, which Five took part in 1999, and I realised Richie was very handsome. So since then, he became my favourite member. The first single I bought was Until the Time is Through, but meanwhile, my father passed away. I was very sad. It was terrible to accept it. When I listened to When I Remember When for the first time, I realised my father would always be by my side. My favourite songs are When I Remember When, Invincible, Until the Time is Through, and during lockdown, I fell in love with It's the Things You Do. Incredible. And I would like to say just then, Lucy, thank you for being so honest there and opening up to us like that. And like you say, incredible. And lastly, I apologize if I get this wrong, but Rochelle says, I remember loving their songs on MTV and listening to their songs on radio, including Slam Dunk Defunk, When the Lights Go Out, and Everybody Get Up. It's a dream come true to have finally met them in 2018 at an I Love the 90s gig in Singapore. amazing gig, and it was lovely to see them perform. So thank you to everybody that sent in those messages on their first memory of Five and their favourite Five song. And I'll be giving you further opportunities in the future to participate in the podcast. Now, let's get to our roundtable on Five's Invincible, featuring Chris, Jan, and Janine. Chris, tell us how you got into Five.
I remember starting listening to them when I was quite young. I must have been about 5-6 years old. And it just carried over to now. And now I'm a promoter and I'm putting on Five next April in Blackpool. It was supposed to be this April, but unfortunately COVID lay waste to that. So yeah, it just carried over.
I'm 34 now, so I've been a fan of Five since I was 12. I got a CD, free CD, with my bank account, my first bank account that I opened, and it had Slam Dunk the Funk on it, and I've been obsessed ever since. Yeah, I've been to every concert, even the little ones where they came to Swindon. I've been to all the Five gigs. I met them backstage a couple of times. It was quite an obsession for a really long time, like literally turning up at like CD UK and SMTV screaming. It was hardcore for a really long time.
That's a fantastic story.
I was supposed to go and see them in February or March, I think, for the Boys Are Back tour. Unfortunately, COVID took care of that one, so I'll be going next year when they're back at Reading.
I've been a fan of Five probably since around the age of 5, something like that. I got started very young on pop music. My mum was very much into her boy bands. And I remember particularly one day we went to a car boot sale and I came back with about 40 CDs of every single boy band you could find. Five featured heavily in that. And I think the song that kicked it all off was Let's Dance. I remember seeing the video on the music channels. And it was always one of those songs that stayed with me throughout the rest of my life. So really, the love for them has never changed. It's only grown over the years. And actually, I was quite lucky because I was too young to see them the first time around. But now I've had the opportunity to see them several times since they've reformed in various guises. So the love for them just continues to grow from there, really.
Not quite as hardcore as some of you, but certainly I got the second album, the particular album we're going to be talking about, Invincible, for Christmas one year, I think. And I listened to that front to back several times. We're talking about Invincible today, which is the second album from Five. We could have had the debut, but since we've had a debut album in previous times, I felt that maybe the themes would be too much repeated, even though it's a different act. So we're talking about the second album, which was absolutely massive, wasn't it, Chris?
Yeah, I think this was the most commercially successful album. I was talking to you yesterday about the debut album, and I said, particularly for me, it's probably my most favourite, but Invincible is definitely the most commercially successful. If You're Getting Down, Keep On Moving, Battlestar, it's got We Will Rock You on there as well, isn't it? I think this album is a lot more, I'm going to get slaughtered for saying this with my long hair and my tattoos, but I think this is a lot more on the rockier side, whereas the original original album was a little bit more poppy. I think that this goes into the dimensions of being a lot more rocky. Obviously, the Queen track. I think this is definitely the most commercially successful album, and I think it's a good one to go for because it's probably got the hits that people would look at Five the most for, which isn't a bad thing. So it's a great album, and it's got some really underrated tracks on this album. It's not all about the hits.
For me, I think some of the unreleased tracks are probably some of the better ones on there, like Two Sides to Every Story is brilliant. I was listening to that album earlier today to sort of get me a bit revved up for this evening. And Don't Fight It as well, which is on there, which is great. I didn't even realise that the Japanese release of this album actually had a song called Reminiscing. I went back and reminded myself, I reminisced of that song as well, which I completely forgotten about. So yeah, I think although We Rock You and If You're Getting Down obviously like the big ones and Keep On Moving. I think for me as well, growing up in Reading, Keep On Moving became the anthem for Reading Football Club for a really long time, especially the football remix, which is on the album. I think that one's probably got a lot of good memories for me. But yeah, I think some of the unreleased stuff is definitely like really underrated. It needs to be played more.
I think this album has got the most unique mixture of tracks compared to their other two releases. Definitely you see their more emotive side on tracks like You Make Me a Better Man and the title track Invincible. Personally, one of my favourite tracks from this era didn't actually make the album but ended up as the B-side to If You're Getting Down, which is When I Remember When. I think personally that's one of my favourite five tracks, and actually that fits in quite well with the theme of this album, because although you have got some of the rockier and more up-tempo tracks and the tracks that people perhaps remember the band for more, there's also a very strong message which is spoken throughout the whole entire album, which is actually don't give up. Life can be tough, but there are many, many things to live for. And I think throughout the whole album, whether you're talking about the more up-tempo tracks or the ballads, there's definitely that message present there. And I think it is also an album which gave the band more of a chance to show everybody's personalities, because I wouldn't say that was as present on the debut album than Invincible. So I think everybody gets a chance to really shine.
I think if you know the story of the band as well, you'd know that mental health is an underlining feature within the band. You know, you had a couple of members that really struggled during this period. So the fact that you mentioned that, like my company is a company that works really, really predominantly with mental health in the music industry. So a lot of people look at me booking five, and I usually book rock and metal bands. People look at me booking five and they're a little bit sort of looking out the side of, you know, what are you doing? But in actuality, it really fits, because five, they do stick with mental health messages, and they did really struggle. And so it's just really good that you mentioned that, because it does come out.
It's a unique thing, because I think it wasn't a subject that was very much touched on in the media, especially the pop industry at the time. And I think although the message has become very clear in recent years, back then it wasn't so easy for people to talk about it, to speak about it. And especially being a member of a band where at the height of their fame, they were very much doorstepped by fans and followed everywhere, that actually getting that message across that they were struggling was probably very, very difficult. So to actually get some of those issues not addressed but discussed within the lyrics of the album, I think was fairly important.
Yeah, I think you're both onto something there, but I think to the layman, to the person who perhaps isn't as familiar with those messages being underneath, some of the lyrics are quite nonsensical, aren't they?
I was just listening earlier to Mr. Z, which, just a bit of an obsessive fan moment, I called my first hamster that. he was called Mr. Z. Actually, like, none of the lyrics really make that much sense. But then if you, like you said, Jan, if you put it into a mental health context, you know, it literally, they're just talking about this guy who lives down the street and he, you know, he's trying to support his wife and kids and he's struggling with that. So yeah, I don't, until you think about that, you don't really put that into that context. But yeah, he does talk about abs, obviously raps at the start about, did you see that, what he did to his cat? It was all big and fat and now we're with cats. Like, it doesn't make any sense, but it's such a good track.
I always felt that it was something that they perhaps wrote in about 10 minutes in the studio and just had like a backing track or something. That's what it felt like. And certainly, even when I've spoken to non-fans that are mildly familiar with their work, that is a track that stands out for some reason when they've heard that album.
I think also, while we're on the subject of that, there's also the hidden track Inspector Gadget, which I think is also quite along the same lines, actually, because I never really associated it with the programme or the film of any kind. It just felt like their take on something off the wall, if you like, as if we went into the studio with no real idea for anything serious, but just something fun and something happy and something that people can sing along to and not really bother about what it means or what it does. So
how old were you when Invincible came out, just out of curiosity, because I feel like I'm really old?
I was five when Invincible came out.
Good.
I would have been about nine,
so I was 14.
You're not that much older.
I was about 10 at the time, so yeah.
The reason why I asked is because actually the Inspector Gadget track was supposed to be used for the film that came out around the same time. And unfortunately, they went with some random boy band whose name I probably couldn't even remember now. And the song that they chose was just, I was gutted as a Five fan because I love the Inspector Gadget song on there. On the Invincible album, so to, yeah, I was angry for a really long time. They were robbed.
I think Jan mentioned, Janine mentioned about them being a band that usually, you know, go for upbeat tracks and whatnot. I think they've always been a band that have focused on their live shows and live. They bring an all-encompassing party vibe to them, and I think a lot of their tracks from all their albums, they look at it and they think, right, what's going to fit with our set? They don't really do any of the down tempo. They don't really throw in any sort of like of the softer songs in there, because I think they think that it'd take away from the vibe of the show. But I actually think it'd actually fit in there. I think they would fit in there more than they think it would.
In the grand scheme of things, musically, they always seemed like kind of the up-tempo, edgy band. There were lots of bands at that era doing lots of ballads, so single-wise, just trying to stand out, really. But I do agree with you that maybe live it could do with a few more ballads just to kind of even it out.
Yeah, just because the ballads would mean more. Because they don't really play them, so they would stick out more. But I think it'd work well with a live set.
I mean, on the most recent set, as part of the Boys Are Back tour, they included "Until the Time Is Through," which I think was the first time they'd sung that in some time, and that really did go down well with the audience. So I think that you're very much onto something there. That mixing it up a little bit and doing the ballads as well as the up tempo songs would really add to their live set.
I'd love to hear Closer to Me played more. Like that song, I mean, it ripped my heart out when that song came out, and the video's even more upsetting. But yeah, I'd love to hear Closer to Me performed, because that tour never happened. That was like the album that never was, the King Size album that came out last. So
you don't really play Don't Want to Let You Go either.
Well, they hated that track. They didn't even want it to be released.
Really?
Yeah, the record label forced it through, and surprisingly enough, it only came in at number 9. It was one of their lowest ranking tracks.
It's a fantastic song.
The messages in that song, if I'm remembering rightly, are basically about being around all the time, which is kind of ironic, really, afterwards, after the fact. A lot of tracks from that album, the Invincible album, kind of have lyrics about being there and being present and being in the moment. And yet, only a couple of years later, the sad split would happen, so...
I remember crying when they split up. Janine was saying about being outside SMTV and whatnot. I remember staying off school one time, because we were on GMTV or something. I wanted to ring in and ask a question. I never got chosen, but I always stayed in and tried to ring up if there was someone on there. Years later, they were on... When they were on This Morning, they were playing Blackburn the same day. Or the day after, and I got on their guest list for Blackburn, which is absolutely incredible. I've got the ticket on my wall. It says Five's guest list on it, and I was like, I've made it. I've finally made it. It's amazing how these bands can keep with you. They can still mean something to you so many years on. If you look at the music that I normally listen to, I listen to really, really heavy stuff, and then I'll chuck on Five, or I'll chuck on, I was just listening to Sophie Ellis Bextor before I came on. It's amazing the music that you listen to when you were a kid, how it carries over and it still means something. This band is still relevant to me. This band that, like, I'm really glad that they're still going as a live band, because they're still good and they still have something to give.
Yeah, you've had a bit of an experience with them, haven't you, Jan?
Yeah, actually, when I went and saw them on the Boys Are Back tour in March, being quite a tall chap, I'm 6'4", and being right in the front row, it does make you generally stand out from other people who are there. And having been a fan for such a long time, when they played some of the more obscure tracks in their set, such as Lay All Your Love on Me and things like that, they were surprised to see that perhaps somebody like me knew all of the words to that. And so Scott actually handed me his mic to sing part of the song. And once the song had finished, there was a competition to win a signed T-shirt. And the audience very kindly started chanting for me to take part in this. Scott asked me if I would perform one of my favorite five songs. And if it was good, then they'd give me the T-shirt. So I chose Battlestar because they hadn't sung it that night. Actually, they opened up with a different song. Actually, I was quite sad of the fact that they didn't sing that, so I thought I'd give that a shot, being one of my favourite five songs, and actually it came off really, really well, and I got the T-shirt, and there's a video floating around somewhere online of this, so if anyone fancies a laugh, then by all means search it up and find it, because the local newspaper dubbed me Dude in the Hat, because I was wearing my five hat. So, yeah, there's a video of that online somewhere if anyone fancies a chuckle.
Yes, I've actually seen it.
Oh, wow, okay. The funniest thing about it was that I actually had a message from a man in Chile, said that the video had gone viral down there and it actually ended up on the local news because he runs, was actually part of a five Chilean five tribute band. And he said that we could really do with your skills.
Well, if you ever want to move to Chile, there you go.
When they toured with the Invincible album, I was part of the Five Official fan club and I was on the website quite a lot. And the lady that ran the website, a girl called Rita, she put out a competition. She managed to get two backstage passes for every concert that they did across the tour. And you had to like write a little like essay thing saying why five meant so much to you. And I put my essay in and I won. So I got to meet them backstage at Wembley. Which was incredible, yeah. Really, really nuts. And then my only sort of like heart-wrenching moment was my camera stopped working just as I was supposed to get my picture taken with Rich. So I've got all of them apart from Rich. And I've never been able to catch him quick enough since then to get a picture. But one day I'm hanging on.
We're talking about the second album predominantly in this round table. Do we think that it's that Invincible is the definitive five album? Is it like the one to listen to, or are there better ones?
I'm going to say the debut. I think the debut is really, really, I don't think it's necessarily stronger. I think that the hits on it are a lot more poppy and a lot better. For me, I'd go with the first album, but you can't go wrong with Invincible.
Controversially, I actually think King Size is probably the best out of the three. I think that they finally found the sound. I think they'd grown up, like, obviously they'd gone through the audition process. Like the first album was really young and they were just sort of finding their way. And then Invincible was a great selection of tracks, but like, I just felt like it needed something more. And then he got to King Size and you were like, yes, this is it. This is the album. This is going to carry us all the way to number one. And we're going to be like rocking. And then literally 2 weeks later, they were like, okay, we're done. And I was like, what? Just, it blew my mind because the album's phenomenal. I remember them saying, oh yeah, we've got like enough for another three albums. They'd done loads and loads and loads of material. And then, yeah. And then they ripped our hearts out and it was all over.
Would you say single-wise, King Size is the best?
Yeah, I mean, it had Let's Dance on it, which is obviously their third number one. And then they finished with a B-side of Closer to Me and Rock the Party. Rock the Party is great. I'm a massive Grease fan. So the fact that they sampled that, I could listen to that all day long.
It's so good live.
It is, but like Feel the Love and like On Top of the World, Breakdown, like they're all such good tracks. And like, I think you can hear, if you listen a lot to the songs, you can hear that there is something that was obviously not quite right. You know, we do now, but at the time we didn't know like what was coming. So I think you can kind of tell with some of the tracks that maybe they weren't at their happiest point when they released the album. But the fact that like Let's Dance just shot straight to number one as the first single off that album, I think was an indication that actually that probably would have been their best, some of their best music. So yeah, I would have loved to have seen a King Size tour. But at the same time, we saw the King Size tour dates, or the dates that were originally supposed to happen, and they probably would have killed them, because it was literally like one country, overnight, another country, overnight, another country, for like, it was just nuts. And like Sean was ill, and Richard hurt his leg in a concert. So he was hobbling around, and like Scott had just had children. So I think it probably would have been, if they hadn't split up when they did, I think the tour probably would have finished them off, because I think they were just at a point where everything was a bit too much. But I still think it's the best album, and I'd love to see them tour it eventually.
I have to agree with Janine. I think I would definitely go for King Size over Invincible, purely because I think by then you're right in what you say, that they had found their sound. But definitively, I think if you are somebody who's not perhaps as much of a super fan of the band, and you went out just to buy a five album, you would more than likely buy Invincible. It sold more copies than the other two albums. The singles off it were more commercially successful. Keep On Moving is probably their best known song. And therefore, if you're not a massive fan of the band and you just wanted some five to listen to, Invincible would probably be the album that you would sort out. So therefore, I think, yes, it probably is definitive, because it appeals to a wider range of people, rather than just perhaps the other album, and more for people who are fans than casual listeners.
Yeah, I think it is very much an introductory album, that one. Thank you guys for joining in today on this. Looking at the tracks on this album, I always finish with this, try to anyway. Let me know your favourite track on this album.
So I'm going to go with, it's got to be a tie, and I don't want to be wanky with my answer, but I'm going to say Keep On Moving or We Will Rock You.
For me, similar to Chris, Keep On Moving's got a special place in my heart, but I actually think Don't Fight It Baby's got to be my favourite one. Absolutely, it's such a good track.
Battlestar all the way, without mainly because it's the song that made me go viral in Chile. Battlestar, yeah.
Isn't it funny? I was going to go for How Do You Feel. I like that one.
Nice. I forgot about that. Yeah,
it is a good track.
Yeah, we don't stop. We don't know how to stop. There we are. Well, thank you guys for joining in today on this virtual roundtable via Zoom, and all the best for the future. And I hope you all get to see five. I hope that Chris gets to book them at some point. I hope, Janine, you finally get to meet Richie. And Jan, I hope that, well, one day you'll get to go to Chile.
Thank you very much.
And once again, I'd like to say thank you very much to the participants of that five roundtable, and we will do some in the future, so please do keep an eye out on social media if you'd like to take part and talk about five, because there's so many other areas of their career to explore. Now, speaking of exploring, it's a brand new feature here on the 90s and Noughties podcast, The Empty Compartment. And I'm joined here by radio presenter David Snape. David, tell me before we get onto this feature, what's your favourite track by Five?
Oh, gosh. I don't think Five haven't had that much of a long career. I think from once out of the top of my head, I suppose Keep On Moving is always kind of like a nice sort of, you know, upbeat tune. It kind of makes you feel good. So I think that would probably be the one that I will pick.
And it's a great choice. So welcome along to a new feature of the 90s and Noughties podcast. It's The Empty Compartment. There's three questions. There's myself joined by a guest as we discuss those three questions in great detail, or not a lot as the case may be. So here's the format. I ask a question, my guest asks the question, then we have a question from a listener. And these are 90s and noughties related questions, and I'll be honest with you, the more random, the better. I'm joined today by David Snape, radio presenter extraordinaire, presenter of a radio show on Mixcloud, which is a platform for allowing people to do such things. David, tell us about your show.
I think over the last 2 years or so, my kind of format is just basically getting, you know, what is best for our local area and bringing all of that into like a radio show sort of format, which is something that I really, really enjoyed doing. It's, you know, it's been part of me for well over 2.5 years. And very recently, in fact, I decided to bring along a co-host, which her name is Christina Groombridge. And she adds a lot of fantastic value to the show. And, you know, we get along so, so well. And, going from strength to strength from that, really.
That's great to hear that your show has been a success over the last couple of years or so, and that you're continuing to build on that with the addition of a new presenter. All the best with that. Now let's get on with the empty compartment here on the 90s and Noughties podcast. I think for this first one, I know that I asked David beforehand to prepare a question. Go on, David, put me out of my misery. What have we got?
Oh, you want me to ask you a question?
Yeah.
Okay. As people will probably be known, my music collection probably goes, but, you know, has expanded quite a lot. One of the things I was thinking about on work was the age-old question between Blur and Oasis because of the amount of hype, you know, they have during the 90s and that. I just want to ask you personally, which do you prefer? Are you a Blur fan or Oasis or both, really?
That is really difficult. And as a broadcaster, I normally don't like to choose one or the other. Go on, Oasis. It's Oasis, isn't it? It's got to be Oasis.
Really?
Yeah. It's got to be Oasis.
You don't think to yourself that you can be a Blur and an Oasis fan at the same time?
But that's not what you said. That is not what you said. You said Blur or Oasis. You said which one? You didn't say or both.
maybe I didn't think of that right, because I struggle with that as well, because there are both types, you know, there are both songs from both types of bands which, you know, I absolutely love. And I, to be honest, I couldn't think you know, between them two. And I don't know if social media is going to give me a battering because, you know, for some, it's got to be one all of the other. But I just can't pick, honestly.
No. It is so difficult to pick between them because they both have their strengths and weaknesses. I'm sure that fans of both bands will tell you, no, they're so different in every way, but they have their own strengths and weaknesses, their own thing. They're both unique in their own way. And I think a lot of the rivalry in there was just stirred up by the media in the mid-90s to sell records, to be honest.
Yeah, of course. I definitely agree with that. I mean, thinking, you know, of Blur and that, I mean, Country House and Park Life and Son 2, you know, absolutely amazing. But then you think of Oasis and you go like Sam Payne's Supernova, whatever.
Roll with it.
Yes, that as well. Oh my! I mean, the list just kind of goes on and on from that, really.
Yeah. So, what is the definitive answer here? Is it that they're both okay in their own thing? Are we going to go out with that really poor answer? That they're just both okay.
They are more than okay. They are both amazing.
Genius.
Bring some positivity into it, man.
Well, okay, that's the wrong phrase. I admit that's the wrong phrase, and an extremely divisive first question there. I hope the listeners get the idea what this thing is, because I was thinking of trying to make this quite lively, and I think it's already started. And thank you, David, for kicking off that particular thing. So my question, imagine it, right? So you're at school.
Mm-hmm.
You have a playtime snack back in the day.
Right,
do you go for the Pringles in the little case, the BN, or something else? And the BN was a biscuit, if you remember, with a little face on it.
Oh right. I was just trying to figure out BN. I thought it was those little sweet Socrates things, these circle things. But maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Maybe.
I mean, I got to admit though, I think for me Pringles was kind of like a late addition. For me, if I'm completely honest with you. I mean, they are definitely something for kind of like the party scene. I definitely love, I think it's like, is it Texas or Texan barbecue ones and that? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, once you had a few, it's an addiction. You just want more and more and more. And I love that, to be fair.
I so thought you were going to say, once you pop, you can't stop. I so thought you were going to say it. But you didn't cheapen it. Thank you. I did.
I know. We know your thing, Jamie. I've known you for many years on that.
Yeah. It's tricky, isn't it? Because I remember back in the day having lots of different kind of playtime snack things. There was that Laughing Cow thing for a while where you could dip it into the cheese, if you remember. And that sort of thing. So, I mean, those are things. Do they even exist now, that stuff?
I would imagine so. But, I mean, back in the day, they used to have TV adverts for the Laughing Cow. Stuff like C-strings that I can remember. I think they still do Pepperami. Is it Pepperami?
Yes.
They still do adverts for that.
I hated cheese strings.
Oh, that's good, because I was never a C's fan anyway. I wouldn't go nowhere near it with a bar spot.
I didn't say I didn't like cheese. I said I don't like cheese strings because they seem really weird. I mean, I remember getting one for the first time, and you're supposed to like peel it off, and instead I just bit into it, and I was like, well, that's not much of a a snack, is it? But then I realised you had to peel it off. It's weird. So yeah, I didn't say I didn't like cheese. I just don't like cheese strings. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do get your point on that, because when seeing demonstrations and that, it just looked very fiddly. It just looked like an absolute faff. Getting it down. So I know what you mean.
But there we are. That is the second question here on the first 90s and noughties empty compartment segment. And if you'd like to be a guest on a future edition, then please tweet at 90snoughtiesuk on Twitter, or go to the Facebook page, which is just simply 90s and noughties UK. So this is the part of the segment where I ask a listener's question. Now, thank you very much to Jane for getting a question to us. So, yeah, the question put to me and you is, pencil cases shaped like food. Was that a thing in your world?
Wow. Not really, to be honest with you. I mean, I can get why You look at the pencil case shaped like a hot dog, and you just think to yourself, "Wow, you really are pulling out all of the stops." And it would seem to me that I think that could be your kind of look. But in my job for the Royal Mail now, I mean, I use a lot of pens, especially ones that you know start to run out and that. It would look weird on me if hiding behind one of those bags, well, one of my mail bags was a pencil case with all of my pens in it, shaped like a banana.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I've seen one that shaped like a baked bean can. I'm sure I've seen that. I'm sure that's a thing. I'm not sure what that is either. I have a recollection in my mind that did exist at some point, and listeners are more than welcome to tell me that I'm wrong. I just don't remember this being a thing. Yeah, that's an interesting question, and hopefully in the future we shall get better questions that will actually be not better as in they're not very good, but questions we can answer or have more to say about, because that I have very little recollection of that being a thing. And that brings us to the end of this first segment of The Empty Compartment. Thank you very much for joining us, David.
Thank you so much, Amy. Really, really great to speak to you. Are you a Blur fan or Oasis or both, really?
It's got to be Oasis.
You don't think to yourself that you can be a Blur and an Oasis fan at the same time?
But that's that's not what you said. That is not what you said. You said Blur or Oasis. You said which one? You didn't say or both.
Or both, really?
Huh. I hope you heard that sound, dear listener, because that was the sound of my hand hitting my face as a facepalm. Because, yeah, I'm going to hold my hands up right now and say he did say that. I was wrong. And in the adventure of radio, I just so happened to go a tiny bit overboard and I didn't hear the question properly. I misunderstood the question. So, yeah, holding up my hands, something to note for the future, must get better at listening to the question so that I can give an actual answer and not call him up on something, even though he actually did say what I said he didn't say. So there we are. But once again, thank you to David Snape for coming on that edition of The Empty Compartment. And if you'd like to see some video versions of the questions posed to us there, then you can go onto YouTube and type in 90s and Noughties UK. That's 90s and Noughties UK. And watch our reaction to some of the questions posed to us. And as detailed by the third question, I would love to hear from you. So if you've got a question related to 90s or noughties pop culture, the more random the better. You can send them to 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. That's 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. You can tweet at 90sandnoughtiesuk on Twitter, or you can go to the Facebook page and simply type in 90sandnoughtiesuk. Questions for us for a future edition. And I should say that us could mean absolutely anybody. So they're not tailored to any specific guest. It's whatever happens to be the way at the time, whoever happens to be sat in front of me. So you're not detailing them to David, and you're not detailing them to the guest who might be on next week. It might be several weeks, and it could be anybody. That's the whole joy of this thing. I hope everybody enjoyed that, because I certainly enjoyed taking part in it. Yeah, so here we are. There's a new feature once more on the last 10 minutes of the podcast. So this last segment is called Jamie's Final Bit. That's a provisional title, while I think of something better, and it's probably something that we won't have to come back to, but with the hour time slot given, sometimes it's a necessity. And I thought I would take these 10 minutes to play you one piece of audio that was left over from a previous interview. In the opening episode of this podcast, we did a special on the Renford Rejects, where I talked to actors Bill Homewood and Tom Weller about their time on the show. Now, given that 1 hour time slot, talking to two actors in detail about their time meant that some things had to be cut out, because literally, especially with Bill, there was so much stuff that wasn't really Rejects related, and I wanted to keep it on the same subject. So I said at the time that I'd play you any bits that that just happened to fall by the wayside. And so right now, completely unrelated to the rest of the podcast, by the way, but thought, why don't I play you this? I'm sure many people in the UK are currently enjoying the repeats of classic Coronation Street, currently at the time of recording in 1996. But not so long ago, Bill Homewood featured in an episode, and I asked him about this in our interview. Here's what he said.
That was 1995, and that was Monty Harris, Johnny Briggs's character. He was Mike Baldwin's best friend, and the idea was to entrap young Steve. And so the storyline went that I caught young Steve using Mike Baldwin's factory for his own, to make money on the side. It was quite a good storyline. It was when Anne Kirkbride was first ill with cancer and had to retire for a while for treatment. So they invented a couple of storylines to fill the plot until Anne was able to come back. And I was one of them. The other one was the lorry driver, the long distance lorry driver that had an affair with Bette Lynch, you know. And his storyline ran and ran. Once Anne came back, but she wasn't doing as many episodes, they dropped my storyline. But I had very good fun on that show for a little while, yeah. I was born up there. I was born in Blackburn, actually, but I dropped back into the accent easily enough. But I left there before it was my main accent, I think, and lived in the South and went to school in the South. My parents weren't Northerners, so. But I don't think on Coronation Street it's a qualification, but it certainly helps to be or have been a Northerner, if you see what I mean.
Actor Bill Homewood talking to me, Jamie Dyer, a few weeks ago on, it was supposed to be on the first edition of the 90s and Noughties podcast, but it ended up on the cutting room floor. Now there for your listening pleasure, talking to me about his time on the soap opera in the UK, Coronation Street, in 1995. And I must say that I have loved seeing the classic Corries. I've kind of fallen out of love with it at the moment. You kind of have to dip in and out of it because it's getting a little bit too close to what I remember being the late 90s, and I kind of feel like at this time I don't feel like revisiting that. However, when they started in the mid 80s, that was fascinating, a little bit slow but fascinating nonetheless. And then moving on to the early 90s, after that amazing long-running storyline featuring long-serving character Rita and Alan Bradley, of course, one of the soap opera's biggest villains. Years before, in fact, something like 10, 15 years before, more like 10, before Richard Hillman entered the soap. So yeah, I love seeing that unfold, and then into the early 90s as we see stuff that becomes more kind of modern day staples. The McDonald's entering, the kind of end of the first round of Ken and Deirdre, and seeing her go off into other areas. And of course Ken as well, introducing a lot of characters that have just recently come to light. So I've loved seeing that, and I kind of said to myself, I'm going to stop watching once Bette leaves. And actually, I did watch a little bit into Jack and Vera getting the Rovers, because I was kind of interested. But at the moment, where they are with those repeats, I find it part boring and part interesting, because it's like Jack and Vera in the Rovers. How does this work? But seeing those classic episodes, certainly about 1990 to about 93, was an absolute joy. The introduction of the stuff over the road, the fact that there was houses over the road now and extra characters they could bring in, the moving of the corner shop, and kind of setting it up for the way in which Corrie is today. Have you been watching those repeats? How long have you been watching for? Have you dipped out of it? And have you wondered, oh, how far are they in now? Because certainly I have characters that I grew up with, the likes of Gail and Sally, and it was a joy to see them in their relatively younger stages, in the mid-80s into the early 90s, and in some ways crossing paths to where I am in life. And that's the magic of soap, having that feeling that you're somehow living the life of one of the characters. Certainly back in the day when it was less about murders and affairs and all that sort of thing, just normal everyday stuff. And I must say, if you ask me, the character I identify most with, it would probably be Derek Wilton, but that's a question for another day, isn't it? That's for an empty compartment. Which 90s Corrie character do you identify with? That's a question. Must write that down. That would be a really interesting thing. And then it would just so happen to be a week where my guest hasn't heard of Corrie or something, or doesn't know what I'm talking about. But that's the magic of the podcast. And I'll bring to an end there Jamie's final bit, which I've just been told is a very funny name, so it might be staying. Yeah, so once again, thank you so much for your support on these weekly podcasts. They are a bit rambly at times, but I like them to be free. I like them to have a variety of different subjects. I don't just like to stick on one thing, because the truth is, if you advertise quite heavily that you've got a 5 round table or a steps round table, or coming up we've got an A1 round table, people start assuming that it's just about music. And really it's not. It's about all of the things that make up UK pop culture of the 90s and noughties. And that is the beauty of this podcast. It could go anywhere, and we'll have many different features. Some will work, some won't. And we're just going to have to wait and see where it goes. And I can't wait to see where it goes and what we can do with it. But do remember as well to rate, comment, and subscribe on your favourite podcast provider so that we can start going up some charts. Maybe it'd be nice to get a number one, wouldn't it? But we won't go that big just yet. We'll wait and see where it goes. So yeah, I hope that you've enjoyed this edition of the podcast. And wasn't the 5 round table good, by the way? I really enjoyed doing that, talking to Chris, Jan and Janine. I had a little bit of a problem with Jan and Janine, which is why I cut out a lot of me saying names, because I got them confused on occasion. But no, always a joy. And like I've said before, do not worry, we will come back to those subjects. 5 is not gone forever. Steps are not gone forever. Corrie is not gone forever. Nothing is gone forever. We can come back to it at a later stage. So, we're near the end of the podcast. And I'm wondering, I mean, we could just cut it off, I suppose, you know, like the end of a cassette where you haven't timed it properly and the song just cuts off at the end. Or I could say thank you very much for listening to this edition of the 90s and Noughties podcast, a podcast on UK pop culture of the 90s and 2000s. If you'd like to get in contact with us, you can email 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. That's 90sandnoughties@gmail.com. You can tweet us at 90snoughties UK on Twitter, or you can go to the Facebook page, which is just simply 90s and Noughties UK. This is Jamie Dyer saying thank you very much for listening, and I will see you on a future edition of the podcast, where we'll have more roundtables, interviews, reviews, and more. Bye-bye for now.